On Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 6th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronzegeist and Sarah Benora, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry, MVT Productions, Rhoda Construction, Wilson Investment Properties, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
I'll first introduce Leslie Appleton-Young. Leslie is the Vice President and Chief Economist of the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 195,000 members. No?
164.
She's actually one of my favorite interviews. Sean O'Toole is, the creator of Foreclosure Radar and now Property Radar. Sean was a successful trustee sale buyer, having bought over 150 properties. He's become a friend of mine. What's going to happen to first-time buyers, you think, in 2014? And why aren't they a participant to the extent, percentage-wise, that they normally would be at this
stage?
They
want to participate, but they can't. They don't have a job. They don't have a down payment. They have student loan debt. They can't compete with all-cash buyers. FHA is no longer a competitive program for many of them.
Why?
'Cause the fees are up, and loan limits may be coming down. I mean, there's a lot of things on the horizon that are going to impact them negatively. So that's one of the really problems with something like the Housing Affordability Index, because it gives you a number, but it doesn't give you the context of the market, right? And how tight, I know you put up the FICO scores, right? And I think Chris mentioned, you know, just from 750 to 710, you get rid of 15% of the market. Well, it's really a shame, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, young home potential home buyers that at 715 are a really great risk, right? But they can't get loans and they can't compete in this marketplace. So one of the positive things a little bit about rates coming up is that refi activity has gone down and lenders have been, at least hear this anecdotally, a little bit more interested in making loans with, you know, a little bit.
From your membership, I'm sure you get lots of feedback. Do they find that there's a lot of overlays that on top of what they think is available for loan products, that the lenders have things that are more restrictive than, you know, what they think is going to be out there, and then they can't get loans that they thought they could?
You know, it's I'm not sure how to answer that, except it's just very challenging, you know, when you're working with someone that needs a loan. And that's why the we do a survey every year where we ask realtors about their last closed transaction. And we've been doing it for 35 years. And the last year we had the highest percentage of all cash. It was 30%. We had 17% of the realtor saying, I was working with an investor. So that's, you know, if you have a buyer like, I mean, I've heard of, you know, there's 50 offers on one property, and if there's any kind of contingency, a loan contingency, an appraisal contingency, whatever kind of contingency, they're not even looking at them.
Right.
Now, the market's changed a little bit. So instead of 50, maybe there's only 10 offers or maybe 4 offers. So it's all a question of degree. But just to circle back, I think this whole issue of first-time buyers is absolutely critical. And at my organization, we really are gearing back up for a huge housing affordability problem and a need to reach out to first-time home buyers and help them get in the ballpark, you know, because they just can't compete in this market. It's really tough.
Now, when you say you're gearing up for a foreclosure, I'm sorry, for a affordability problem?
Well, yeah. So we're going to put on 6 regional home buyer fairs next year, just reaching out to potential first-time home buyers to talk to them about. I mean, I think with respect to that group, you have to speak to them early and often before, because they can find homes on their own. It's like, how do they save money? How do they get their debt in order? You know, Freddie Mac has this wonderful program called Credit Smart that's on their website that really helps people kind of understand the responsibilities of home ownership and how to get in. And I think just as an organization, we're getting much more focused on that because it's the big issue, or one of the big issues going forward. And whatever happens in Washington with respect to the mortgage interest deduction and the GSEs and so on and so forth, I think we can probably all agree that it's not going to get easier. Just not.
Okay. Sean, you and I, you know, when I was doing the last report, you provided data for hedge fund participation.
Yeah.
Why don't we share a little bit about, you know, what they bought during, let's say, those years that they were dominant, and are they slowing down or being the same or changing locations? What's your feeling on that?
So the way we measure it is purchases by LLCs, LPs.
Okay.
And that peaked in October 2012 at about 10% of sales.
Okay.
And it's now down 55% last month to just under, right around 5% of sales.
Now, when you say that could have been some people in this room, right?
Well, yeah, the LLC LP is a little bit broader. We definitely have plenty of small, you know, professional investors that buy in those kinds of entities. So it does include them as well.
Okay.
But it seems that, you know, we've gone through and handpicked some of them out from some of the names that we know, but overall, it's tens of thousands of records, so that's been the fastest way to kind of measure it, keep track. You start. Some of these folks are creating new entities every month, so tying them back to the parent entity gets a little tough, and they use strange names.
Okay. Do you consider that they've been a market maker forcing prices upward, and do you consider them dangerous if they exit?
I think absolutely. I think they realized early on that home prices were well below where they should have been, that ROIs were higher than really they should have been, and saw the buying opportunity and came in a big way and took advantage of that. And I think it's pretty clear that the reason they've left the building or leaving the building is because prices have risen to a point where those ROIs are no longer attractive. So I think that makes all perfect sense.
Are they keeping that inventory, or are they all making sort of scattered decisions?
Yeah, so on the exit side, I mean, you certainly have some that have decided to exit. The Colony folks have said they're exiting, but they're primarily looking for another bulk purchaser to kind of take that portfolio on rather than to say, hey, we're going to drop these single-family homes out there. Back in, I think it was 2004, there was a gentleman that bought like 300 homes. I don't remember the story exactly, in the Sacramento area. And he decided in 2004 that he'd seen enough appreciation and wanted out. And he went to evict all 300 tenants at the same time. And the government jumped in and actually said, no, you can't do that. He's like, well, why can't I? and so they ended up negotiating with him that he would sell them slowly over a period of time. I don't think any of the hedge funds, even if they decide this isn't a business they want to be in anymore, is going to just suddenly put all of their inventory, on the MLS. I think that the possibility of that is zero.
Have they been market makers in rent values?
I think they'd like to be, but, I don't have any data there, so I can't really say for sure.
Okay.
I'm sure that I have some anecdotal stories from some principals that have said that they had hoped to see more rent appreciation than they'd seen, and that renting the homes is tougher,
okay,
than they hoped. I think that's obvious to anybody in here who's owned a rental.
Leslie, just one last question. Loan limits declining. It's not so much the amount but it seems like the intent. So if they lower loan amounts 5%, that's going to not be as big an effect, but that's not the intent to stop there, is it? As far as if that's going to be the trend, then those loan limits on FHA or Fannie Mae are really going to start changing.
Yeah, and I think Chris really spoke to this really well. It's just there's so much policy uncertainty right now. You know, there's a couple bills that were introduced, Senate, House, on the GSEs. They don't mesh. There's a new proposal out. I don't think anybody has any idea, but it makes it very difficult to kind of make long-term decisions about anything at all. But anything that reduces the loan limits in the current environment where we've got, 85% of the loans bought by being purchased by the GSEs is going to be a problem for California. Now, we're still, you know, our statewide median's at 440, and there were a couple of months at the peak of the market where the median was 625. In many areas, we're still 20-30% below that prior peak. That's not the case in the Bay Area,
no,
as an example, and in Silicon Valley. I mean, we're right up and kind of surpassing some of those areas. So, the loan limits are a huge issue.
Okay. We're going to introduce our next two speakers. I'll begin with Deborah Still. Deborah Still, CMB, is President and Chief Executive Officer of Pulte Mortgage, a nationwide lender that's headquartered in Inglewood, Colorado. The company employs 542 individuals throughout the United States, and since 1972 has helped more than 300,000 homebuyers finance their new home purchases. Deborah recently served as chair of MBA's Residential Board of Governors and is member of the Association Board of Directors. Thank you for joining us again. And next we have Mark Palem as Vice President of Applied Economic and Housing Research at Fannie Mae. Mark is responsible for overseeing the economic and strategic research groups, forecasting functions, and manages multidisciplinary partnerships across the company to address specific business issues facing Fannie Mae. His work focuses on the impact of trends in financial service sector on the economy and on Fannie Mae, and he's been with us before, and we welcome you back, too.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, Deborah, I think everybody's really interested in hearing this. You have your 100-year bash coming in late October for Mortgage Bankers Association. What is the mood of the industry right now?
Yeah, the industry has come off a pretty good year, very much driven by refinances for a lot of lenders, and so it's been a good year. We're about 90 days away from implementing about 3,500 pages of Dodd-Frank rules, so you have a bit of tentativeness with readiness from lenders. Refinances are down about 70% in the last 60 days. So at a time when revenues are coming down, overheads driven by compliance are going up, and a whole lot of complexity. So I think you've got an industry that's feeling good, but a bit tentative going into the new year.
Okay. What changes have been made that concern you the most? And are there changes yet to come that you really don't even know the full story on yet?
Yeah, so you've got, the challenge for Washington right now is to really thread the needle and get the perfect balance between consumer protection and broad access to credit. And we know that the credit markets right now are overly tight. We saw some of that data. FHA credit scores are averaging about 700. And so we've got an overly tight credit environment today. What happens in January when you get the complexity mostly of the ability to repay rule? So the ability to repay rule is going to define who does and doesn't get loans for the next generation of consumers. And so we've got to get the rule right. The CFPB has, I think, done a good job and said that any loan that's sold to a government agency can be considered a qualified mortgage, and therefore there's a secondary market for that. And then they put a patch in place that said as long as you can sell a loan to the GSEs, Fannie or Freddie, while they're in conservatorship, you can consider that the definition of a qualified mortgage. Fannie and Freddie now only buy QM loans or qualified mortgages. So, you know, you think about California, a high-priced market where you have a lot of jumbo buyers. Those loans aren't eligible in some cases to be sold to an FHA, VA, or the GSEs based on loan limits. So you've got a jumbo buyer. The maximum back ratio is now 43% as of January 10th. And we have a whole lot of very creditworthy jumbo buyers that exceed the 43%. So there's concern, certainly, at the high-priced markets. You know, you were talking about loan limits coming down. We get concerned as lenders that if loan limits come down, you're putting more folks in the jumbo space. So we'll depend on private capital. And right now, private capital is really only back in very small part, maybe 10% of the market, and only back for the wealthiest borrowers. So private capital hasn't historically provided broad access to credit for middle-class America, and we've got to be concerned about all those tensions as we move into January.
You would think that one of the considerations they have to have is that this industry can be a driver to GDP, which it really needs all the help it can get, and we're about to really do some changes that probably will reverse some very positive effects. And you gave one example. It's obvious refis are going to be not the biggest driver of income for maybe a very long time. Does that usually lend itself to more creativity in the non-government space? In other words, do you think you're going to see some lenders emerge with programs that kind of smack of risk, but they'll be able to pull it off because of the price aggression that's likely?
Yeah, so if you do a qualified mortgage and meet the definition of QM, you are in what's called a safe harbor, so you have maximum legal protections as a lender. If you are outside of the QM box, the penalties for not establishing appropriately the ability to repay for a borrower are very, very expensive. MBA's data would suggest if a lender were to make a loan and make about $4,000 on that loan and were to be challenged by the consumer in court, the penalties would be approximately $100,000. So, which is why lenders are going to make sure that at least initially they're lending in the safe harbor space rather than in this experimental space. And if we're going to be in the non-QM space, lenders will in all likelihood lend to the high end of the market, the wealthiest borrowers. You know, Bruce, you were talking about, you know, the drivers of future housing demand, and the data that I look at suggests that about 60% of household formation between 2010 and 2020 come from two cohorts, the Echo Boom, which is about 5 million more individuals than their parents, the baby boomers, who drove housing in the 80s. And then you've got immigrant buyers. So about 60% of housing growth is going to come from the first-time home buyer. We will not get a sustainable housing recovery without that first-time buyer. And the big question that we have to ask, and Washington is asking, the administration and the CFPB are saying, do we have credit that will be available for those borrowers?
Before I go to Mark, one last question. The attitude of the decision makers in regards to the final version of Dodd-Frank, is it punitive or is it constructive?
You know, I think the CFPB did a really good job of doing the best it can with the Dodd-Frank law, so with Congress's intent. We still have a lot of clarifications. The biggest challenge right now with the ability to pay rule is the definitions. QM says the borrower may not pay more than 3 points. But your definition of 3 points and my definition of 3 points is not the definition inside the QM rule. There's a portion of the mortgage insurance premium in there. There's a portion for affiliated businesses. The title fees go in there. And so it's a very complex calculation. So it's more complexity. But this rule, when it originally was published, was much more restrictive than it is today. So the CFPB has gotten us a long way down the road. Where they've stopped short is where they believe Congress had intended for something, and if you want a wider credit box, you need to go back to Congress.
Okay. So it really And I guess one follow-up question. It's eased during the process of creating the law. Is it usually true that after something's established that there can be changes made to it that might be also more aggressive, or is that harder to do?
Yeah, no, I think there's a couple of things. The CFPB has some authority, interpretive authority, and so we will be able to tweak over time as we understand the impact. NBA has been lobbying for some sensible changes to ensure broad access to credit. CFPB has pretty much said at this point, we're done rule writing. We'll implement in January. We'll see the impacts, and then we'll consider what we need to do next. But if it was specified in the law, we're all going to have to go back to Congress and get Congress to change the law. And there are a whole lot of folks in Congress, particularly folks that were the architects of Dodd-Frank, that don't really want to open that box and allow that debate to then just totally wipe out the law.
Okay. And during the process of the last 3 years, because that's how long this has been, Mortgage Bankers Association and California Association or National Association, everybody's been lobbying for our industry and helping. I would think it would be hard for a congressman. I mean, a couple days ago, right before this, I decided to pull up some very recent amendments to Dodd-Frank, and one of them was 280-something pages, and the other one was 82. So for some light reading, I went home with, 4 inches of... And then you realize that the bill's 2,800 pages, that or 3,500 or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you realize that when you're sitting across from people in Congress, you could make the brightest suggestion in the world, and maybe nobody's home because they don't understand.
Yeah, it's, you think about from a lender perspective. So the ability to repay rule is, I think, 806 pages, and that's one rule. And trying to implement that complexity, the servicing rule is 1,200 pages long. And so the big concern now is if lenders aren't ready on January 10th, does all lending stop? And, the good news is we do have the patch. We have the patch to the government agencies. So we know we can make those loans safely. It's everything else that we'll have to wait to see if private capital is interested in playing in that space.
Okay. Mark, thank you for your patience. I'm going to get to the report that you wrote, or it's a short report, but the impact of rising interest rates on housing recovery and the history of that. But I guess I wanted to ask you about the refi programs. Have they benefited as far as the characteristic of people making payments on time? Have those improved in, say, 2012 and 2013 versus their, the former efforts, and have price increases really help people, stick with the payment structure and make that a safer program?
In general, we've seen a decline in the delinquency rate, and we've seen it for quarter after quarter. So our book is performing a lot better than it was a few years ago.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting High Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Claudia Buys Houses, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, Phoebe for Investors by Investors, Home Vestors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Inc., John Merrill Investments Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, REIExpo.com, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez, The Bottom Feeders, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, and Westin South Coast Plaza. See isurvivedrealestate.com for video of the live event and more on our sponsors.